Well, thank you very much for having me today. I have pastored the same church over in Beaver, Grandview area, for 35 years. They haven't run me off yet. And God has blessed in many, many ways, been in the ministry full-time for 47 years. Many of you can't imagine being 47 years anything. You're too young. But God has blessed, and I'm very grateful for the privilege of being able to serve Him. I never take off my pastor hat or my Christian hat, but I do put on, along with that, a senator hat. And God has given me very many blessings and challenges along the way. This is a different chapel, so this is not a typical message. You're going to hear the word I more than I'm comfortable with. But that's what I've been asked to share so that you have a little bit of an understanding of what somebody in the will of God can do in government. And by His grace, I will try to balance that out for you today. I gave those verses as our meditation verses on purpose because Shammah was one of the mighty men, one of David's three mighty men of valor. He was a hero of the faith. And there was a bean patch, a lentil patch, that was controversial. We see that in wars also, where you have different battle fronts and the battles that go on. And often it's over a hill or it's over a valley. In this case, it was a bean patch. And this man named Shammah, I say Shammah, Shema, whatever. I took Hebrew and Greek, all of that also. But anyhow, I'm using American, I don't know if you want to say transliteration, whatever. But Shammah made up his mind he was going to stand. Now, you notice in 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 11, there it says that there was a piece of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistines. Now, what happened was people ran. We have many of God's people. These are God's people. Many of God's people are running and are afraid in fear of what government can and threatens to do. Shammah was not one of those. Shammah stood his ground and he won the victory. The people, no doubt, were thrilled with his courage and his strength. I just glanced at my watch, as we always do in today's technology age, don't we? And within the hour, I received a message from a young man here in the Beckley area, and he says, "I want to thank you for your courage and values and morals." He understands what I'm trying to do in a very difficult and dark place in government. Shammah decided that he was going to do the right thing, even though people fled. And no doubt, 5 years ago when I entered into the political arena for the first time in my life, never thinking that I ever would, doing so with the absolute confidence that God had called me to do it on January 13th, 2018, on a Saturday morning, God spoke to my heart immediately, and I knew God wanted me in the West Virginia Senate. I can't explain that fully, but I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's what God wanted, and that is exactly what God did. And so it wasn't going to happen as easily as I thought it would, but it did happen, and I'm very thankful. In verse 12, it says that Shammah stood in the midst of the ground and defended it, and slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great victory. Please understand, it's always God's victory, it's not our victories. West Virginia is our bean patch, and we should do everything we can to protect and preserve its goodness. It was historian David Barton of the Wall Builders Association that emphasizes the historical significance of pastors serving in political offices. The English referred to the preachers in America as the black-robed regiment. They said without preachers, America would still be an English colony. We have thousands of published sermons down through the years that prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that pastors have always been involved in current events and politics until fairly recently. In his farewell address, George Washington said, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports." Historian J.T. Headley said, "The patriotic clergy of the Revolution were the soundest statesmen of the times." Did you know that 44 of the men from the 13 states who ratified the U.S. Constitution were ordained men of God? 44 of them. They were recognized as the statesmen of the era. Preachers don't like corruption. Preachers understand that they will answer to God for everything that they get involved in, and they don't get bought off like others who seek elected office so often for money, power, or fame. As a senator and as a pastor, I serve one God in two locations. I like to think of it like I'm going on deployment or a tour of duty on behalf of the citizens of our state. I want to share with you three major points. First of all, the caution. Second, the context. And thirdly, the conclusion. The caution. I would advise everyone to make sure God has called them before they personally get involved in politics. I'm continually grieved and confronted by three things: the liquor that flows, the language, and the lifestyles that are lived. They are worldly, they are ungodly, and the behavior is not certainly becoming what should be the life of a Christian. Don't be deceived by the glamour or the notoriety of becoming an elected official. The world is full of snares for God's children who are not following God's will for their lives. Don't mistake yourself on that. There are two legislators that I deal with their families directly almost every day. Their families fell apart, and part of that mix was when they got into the state government. And so I caution you, always seek God's will, not your ego. In keeping with this year's Form of a Servant theme, and to fulfill the request for me to share with you a portion of my extended ministry as a state legislator in Charleston, please note that it is God which gets the glory, and I am only His representative. That is where I am coming from. Now the context. I've been able to serve as chair, vice chair, joint co-chair, or a member of over 20 committees, including finance, education, health and human resources, school choice, economic development, transportation and infrastructure, workforce, and rulemaking review. I have served as the chairman of the majority party and now serve as assistant majority whip. Here are a few illustrations of positive changes God has allowed me to see on my watch. Many of you know that West Virginians have long been laughed at because of poor oral health and the condition of their teeth. Many a joke has been told. With Senate Bill 648, I was able to directly influence $11 million to be secured in order to provide $1,000 per year of dental care, oral health care, to some 400,000 people in West Virginia on Medicaid, and that came with a 9-to-1 federal match. Every state dollar was matched by 9 federal dollars. That is a great advantage for West Virginians with oral health problems. Up to before that point, there was only one option for people on Medicaid if they had oral health problems, and that is to have the teeth pulled. Thus, we have all of those pictures everywhere that made us look foolish and silly in the eyes of the world because we had a bad law that needed to be corrected and straightened out. There's a second part to that bill that I'm very proud of, and that dealt with what the government calls the working poor. Now, basically, that's a lot of people in the ministry, the working poor. Quite honestly, I'm serious there. It is people who make up to 138% of the federal poverty rate, which equates to somewhere around, if a family of four makes less than $52,000 a year, they would qualify for, and this is the case right now, they would qualify for each member of the family, $1,000 worth of dental care every year. Now, if they have extensive problems, they can play a little bit of the game there. The fiscal year ends June 30th, and the new fiscal year begins July 1st. So the dentist can schedule them for the first part of their oral surgery or whatever needs to be done in July, and that would be one fiscal year for the $1,000, and they can get a second $1,000 first one in June, second one in July, and then they would be able to get $2,000 worth of oral health care to help them. And you understand that good oral health care makes good body health, and it affects the rest of your health. And so Senate Bill 648 will not only pay for itself annually with the 3-to-1 match on the poverty level there and the 9-to-1 match with the Medicaid, but it will invoke self-confidence and create smiles in a multitude of West Virginians in the years to come. So far, there have been hundreds of thousands of procedures done on West Virginians because of this one bill. In the origination of the bill, it was stated that it would only cover certain procedures of oral health. I was appalled when I realized that that was going to be the way the bill was going to pass. And so in one of the committees that I was on, I argued that it needed to be the decision of the patient and the dentist or the oral surgeon what kind of procedure should be done for this. And it was unanimously agreed to, put into the bill, and so it doesn't matter what the oral health is. You say, well, that's not very, very religious-minded. I think it's very religious-minded. I think it's helping people where they live and who they are. And I will tell you that there's a whole lot of people that are very embarrassed with the shape of their teeth and their mouth. And this is very personal. And so this lifts up all of West Virginia. I move on. As chairman of the Senate Majority Caucus and vice chair of education, I've been on every education committee that there is, joint and Senate. As the chairman of the Senate Majority Caucus and vice chair of education, I was able to help write and guide the HOPE scholarship to passage. This included being grilled by the minority leader for 20 minutes on the Senate floor while he had my school's handbook displayed on his computer and was in debate attack mode. This bill is saving families about $28 million in tuition this year and is poised to allow state education dollars, tax dollars, to follow every child in West Virginia beginning July 1st, 2026, if we don't make it happen sooner. And we will try. When it is fully implemented, the total cost will be about $130 million per year because every homeschool and private school child will become automatically eligible. The HOPE Scholarship has since been replicated in many states across the country as the best school choice piece of legislation to date. Number three, in August of 2022, we had a special session to pass an abortion ban bill because the U.S. Supreme Court had struck down Roe v. Wade and placed state legislatures responsible for abortion laws. We failed miserably and couldn't agree on the wording last August. I was the caucus chairman charged with leading the heated meetings behind closed doors. It was ugly and intense with many hours of debate. It took me over a week to calm down because I knew babies. Excuse me. because I knew babies were being aborted every day because of our failure. Then in September, another special session was called, and we succeeded. We succeeded in passing a bill that became the law within 24 hours of Indiana passing a similar ban. We were the second state in the nation to get our law passed. A few other accomplishments include obtaining $6 million for a new Salvation Army facility in Beckley, which will serve several counties. We should break ground on a $75 million Veterans Administration nursing home facility in Beckley any time now. I was privileged to secure the final state investment of $8 million, which has now grown to $14 million because of inflation. It has been approved by the VA in Washington, D.C. We're waiting on the contractor to give us the approval for groundbreaking. Churches were being taxed by some county tax assessors in West Virginia. They were saying, and they were right, current law said that the sanctuary could not be taxed, but they could tax the parking lots and the gymnasiums and the campgrounds, all of those places. And so there were some that were being taxed, some churches that were being taxed with their ministries, the property, and then there were others that were being threatened, if you open that camp or if you open that Christian school, then you're going to pay full taxes on that, even though they are a church, even though they were supposed to be tax exempt. Christian schools and other ministries are being threatened by taxation if they dared to open. After 3 years of trying, God gave my bill success to stop that practice. Churches are now free. To God be the glory. You can open your campground. You can do anything with your church. We have a whole list, and that one sentence was put in law, and it is now code. Both the DHHR and the Department of Education were requiring Christian schools to license their preschools. They were saying grudgingly that you could have a K-5 through 12, but you can't have a preschool without getting a license and going through all of the hoops that we require. Well, that was offensive to me and to many others. And that law to control Christian schools and churches was ended by the grace of God through a bill that I introduced. That was last year. 2 days ago, I was privileged to be honored at the Charleston Marriott with the Champion of Adult Education Leadership Award, by a national organization. There's only been one other West Virginia recipient in all of these years. I had the privilege of being able to address quite a large crowd and express my appreciation and the need for their continuance to succeed with success stories in helping people. We have a problem in West Virginia and across the nation, and it's been a long-term problem. In K through 12, we have a whole lot of children that are slipping through the cracks of education. They are struggling, and the system has not allowed for school choice or individual needs to be met. And so we've had to fight every time along the way. Every time we get a good bill passed, we know it's going to be a couple of years before the bill can be enacted because we're going to be sued. I think it was 2 days before Christmas one winter. I had a knock at my door. It was 8:30 at night. My wife and I were playing board games at the kitchen table with our granddaughters, and the knock came to the door, and it was somebody issuing me a subpoena. And it was a federal subpoena that for a whole list of many things. And of course, I thought, oh boy, here we go. And it was a lawyer's firm from New York State. And it was over some particular issues. I won't go into that. But what I did the next business day as I got hold of the Attorney General and said, guess what what was delivered to me? And he said, you weren't the only one, but ironically, you were the only senator that got one. And he said, don't worry about it. Don't answer it. I will take care of it. And he had to file the proper paperwork in court to be able to block them because they were asking for access to information that they did not have legal authority to do. There's all sorts of things that happen all of the time behind the scenes. We have the children that are slipping through the cracks. And what happens to those children? In West Virginia, we have third graders. We have a 70% of the third graders tested in West Virginia public schools are not at proficiency levels in reading or in math skills. So what's going to happen to them by the time they get to eighth grade when they do the next testing? Well, we already know that because they drop another couple of percentage points. And by the time we test them at 11th grade, we have a 25% proficiency rate. But what happens to the 75% of those kids? That's who we're trying to minister to, folks. I mean, we are hurting in all sorts of ways in our society and in our nation and in our state because of the failure of systems, education systems. And so this award that I was given is because I care. And somebody acknowledged that, and I got on somebody's list somewhere, and they connected with me and let me know that I would be the one receiving the champion award. I'm very grateful for that, but I told them that my goal is to work them out of a job because I'd like to straighten out the problems with the system of education, K-12 and higher ed, and I am in the positions to be able to influence it, but I can't control it. The conclusion is that God can use ordinary Christians like you and me to change a community, a town, a state, or even a nation. Do you think it can happen? The answer is absolutely yes. God can do whatever He wills to do. It is our responsibility to surrender and faithfully serve Him. I drive back and forth from Charleston. I've been back and forth to Charleston the last 5 days in a row. That takes me out of the ministry and other things that I have responsibilities for, but I've done that because of those responsibilities there. I do not stay overnight in Charleston because bad things happen to people who stay overnight in Charleston with lobbyists and all of the other junk that goes on. It's unbelievably ungodly and accepted at all levels of state government. I'm just going to say that, not just politicians. I'm talking about state workers and other people. Who are you shacked up with this month kind of a thing. It's the world. It's ungodliness. I drive back and forth. In his original manuscript of his Constitutional Convention speech in 1787, Benjamin Franklin said, God governs in the affairs of men, in the affairs of man, and if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this. I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. And certainly Benjamin Franklin had some wisdom as he said that. Paul Stuber said the founding fathers understood that the only way America would survive is for God to be its rock and foundation. We can see every day the results of removing God as the foundation of America. That's where the battlegrounds are. I will leave with the leaders today the score for West Virginia when it comes to faith and the Faith and Freedom Index and where we stand as a state concerning religious freedom. This means I still have some more things to do. Our ranking is 39%. We have a lot of work to do in order to try to get our state in a position where we have true religious freedom. There are definite ways and definite things. One of those ways is by having a constitutional amendment that is designed to allow churches to incorporate. Last fall, there were four amendments on the ballot. One of those amendments was mine. It was to allow churches to constitutionally incorporate. Churches and ministries all across the state are incorporated because the Secretary of State has had an agreement with them for many years now in West Virginia that they will look the other way and let them incorporate. So I'm trying to get the Constitution in line with practice. But there were a few other amendments on that ballot that had some controversy attached to them, and everything went south. My amendment had the most votes. It was the best, but there were not enough votes to pass. That will be submitted again in January, and hopefully will be on the next ballot, and we'll be able to make it possible to constitutionally, and I'll probably put some other things in there to try to get the number up for our score here so that we can have better things with religious freedom. We were able to pass the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and I'll just say for a minute or two here that that is a bill that protects Christians in the workplace and Christians in ministry, so that now the court must. They said they would before, but now we say they must follow certain criteria before they can make Christians do certain things or churches or ministries do certain things when they allow other secular organizations to get away with those things. So it's a balancing the playing field for people in religious ministry and service. I'm very thankful to be able to serve the Lord. It isn't an easy thing, but it is something that God gives the strength and the grace, and He has given me the position. I ask for your prayers as I do so. The button that I wear doesn't have a whole lot of meaning for many people, but there are only 34 people in the state of West Virginia that can wear this pin. This pin has two diamonds in it. That means I was elected in two general elections. If God gives me a third one in 2026, then there will be a new pin given to me with three of those on there. I don't know how long or what God's going to do. I am just thankful to be part of God's plan. And if God chooses you to do so, make sure it's God's will. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would bless this institution and these folks that are involved in it. I pray that you would raise up a generation of people who would be like Shammah and defend what needs to be defended in the name of the Lord. I thank you for the privilege to stand in your service here in Raleigh County as well as in Charleston. In Jesus' name, amen.